Visiting Quarry Hill gives you the sense of a place that's settled into a quiet old age, whose sense of purpose around free living, communal child rearing, and vegetarianism is in the past. The bumpy driveways lead to a variety of houses. Some are ramshackle and needing a little work, others prim and well-kept. The people who live in them might still subscribe to some of the founding ideas of the community, but they no longer constitute a reason to live here as they did in the beginning. The job of managing the 140 acres her late parents bought has fallen to the couple's daughter, Isabella Fisk McFarlane, who goes by her childhood nickname, Lady Bell.
Here are some kids around the pond in the 1950s. This is my cousin David. This is Steve Hunick, you know, the Dog Mountain guy who lived here in the 60s and 70s.
Among the many mementos of her life that fill McFarlane's house at Quarry Hill is a photo album full of images of her childhood spent there and in Florida.
And this is my mother. She was very beautiful, really quite remarkably so.
Your parents started this community in 1946.
Yes.
There were some basic tenets it was founded on. Can you explain what they were?
Well, they first of all just wanted to have a place they could come to in the country where they could enjoy themselves in complete freedom, which meant being able to sunbathe naked if they wanted to, and to paint and to write. But my father was very sympathetic with children. He just decided that there would be no hitting, no matter what. We would never hit children here, and that would be immediate grounds for asking people to go away. And also that we wouldn't kill animals or raise animals for killing or fish on the place.
So in terms of your memories of the time you spent here during your childhood, you know, give us a sense of how many people were here, what sort of activities went on.
I had a really wonderful time as a child here. I thought it was like a beautiful kingdom, you know. It was just paradise. There were not a lot of people at that time, maybe 10 or 15, 20 people. It depended. Then Irving's advertising capabilities kicked in, and he started to make a brochure that says Free Vermont Mountain Vacations, you know. So people would come up, and then he would ask them for a donation for $10 a week or something like that.
And then in terms of communal activities, what did people do together?
Drew, painted, read, talked, discussed the books they were reading.
When we think commune and we think of Quarry Hill as a commune.
No, we didn't really think of ourselves as a commune. My parents thought of it as an artist's colony, a paradise for souls, they called it. People who were interested in free thinking and free love and painting and being unconventional. One of their favorite books was Moby Dick, which is a strange book to have as a favorite book in some ways. But they saw themselves, or Irving saw himself perhaps, as being like Ahab, and all conventions as being like Moby Dick, something that he just had to fight down and get away, you know, that before it got any more of him than it already had.
So, yeah, when you say it wasn't a commune, then you know, it wasn't a place where people necessarily did group activities. It was more of a place where you came to do whatever you wanted to do.
In those days. But you're asking about a very early period.
The relative quiet of Quarry Hill in the 1950s was followed by a much busier time in the 60s when the counterculture blossomed. As McFarlane's family made their annual treks between Vermont, New York, and Florida, her father, Irving, invited the people he met to Rochester. Many took him up on the offer.
I liked them all, but I felt a little overly responsible at age 16 or whatever, trying to find room for all of them or figure out, you know, straighten out the fights and the arguments. And we did have communal meals then. It was very difficult to get, you know, Whole Foods at that time. We had to go all the way up to Hatches and St. Johnsbury with our one vehicle. And sometimes there just wasn't much money around. It was really, really low on money sometimes. So we would be making things like milkweed casserole, you know.
In addition to communal meals, there was shared child rearing.
Each person was asked, expected, or sometimes pressured a little by the person who was making the list to be with the kid for 4 hours and take care of them. And, you know, we would watch them for a while to make sure they were good at it, and we would teach them how to do it, and giving the parent, who is often a single mother, a break that way. We also, you know, became close with each other, and the women mostly had the control over the whole thing because they had the houses. They had some money, usually from welfare or from their parents or whatever. And men would just sort of sleep wherever they could crash. Women often had a primary relationship, a secondary and a tertiary relationship.
The influx of people in the 60s and 70s brought with it people who called Quarry Hill home rather than a place to visit.
We had our own school, the North Hollow School, which all the parents taught and some of the non-parents taught.
How long did that school operate?
Maybe 12 years. There was an underground comics rubber stamp company created by me and my ex-boyfriend, Art Spiegelman, and a bunch of others.
As people settled at Quarry Hill, some built their own houses on the property owned by McFarland's parents.
As my parents were driving from Vermont to Florida or Florida to Vermont, or wherever they were, they would see somebody interesting looking by the side of the road, and my father would say to them, you look interesting, what are you up to? Well, not really much of anything, I'm just, you know, playing my guitar going down the road. Well, why don't you just follow us up to Vermont and you can build a house if you want and stay with us forever. My brother, age 10 or whatever, was following Irving around saying, don't say that, Irving. I'm going to have so much trouble when you die. They're going to claim the land is all theirs. Exactly what happened. I think it was always, in my mind certainly, that the houses themselves belonged to the people. They never had any trouble selling them, for instance, if they wanted to leave. There was never any argument over it. But they wanted more than that. They wanted to be able to get mortgages and, you know, make it easy to sell the house. And for that, they wanted the land. So, you know, little by little, discontent grew.
McFarland says some of those who lived at Quarry Hill had no money, a few were wealthy, and others supported families with regular day jobs. By the late 1990s, the tension over who owned the houses on the land had grown. It's a period McFarland calls the Great Divorce. She says mediation led to an agreement that provided those who built the homes with long-term leases. Today, about 5 of the 20 or so dwellings at Quarry Hill are unoccupied. A large community building has rooms for rent, with several occupants currently living there. The numbers swell in the summer, but McFarland says there are 20 to 30 full-time residents at Quarry Hill. The school is long closed and communal events are few and far between. She says people are generally on friendly terms, but they largely keep to themselves.
I would say it is a neighborhood in many respects. We have potlucks, not as much as I would like.
How well do you know the people who live here now?
Not as well as I did. Not very well.
What would you like Quarry Hill to be if you could make it anything you wanted?
Oh, isn't that a nice question? I love that question. I would like it to be... I always wanted to have what Robert Heinlein called a water brotherhood, you know, in his book, Stranger in a Strange Land. It's not a very well-written book, but it's a great idea. The idea being that you share water with people and then you're married to them in time and eternity, and a kind of group of people who really love and are dedicated to each other and who enjoy each other's presence and who laugh and have fun. I miss that aspect of things.
One event that continues is an all-night dance held for years every summer at Quarry Hill. It will take place in August this year. McFarlane credits her husband, Brian, who works as an engineer in Burlington, with maintaining the corporation that her family set up to run the community. Her children are grown now and living elsewhere, but she hopes they'll return to live at Quarry Hill someday, along with the children and grandchildren of others who've called the Rochester community home over the last 68 years.